Hey, so I'm Amy. I'm the host of the Woman in Comedy podcast, and I get to chat with amazing women in the industry, behind the scenes, up on the stage, all about their journey, and a little bit about me. So I work as a programmer for the Woman in Comedy Festival here in Manchester. I also work as a progression booker and look after Beat the Frog for the Frog and Bucket, and work as an artist liaison. Is pretty much me, and I've worked in comedy since 2013. And I started this podcast because I just wanted to talk to amazing women, really, and just have a platform for us to chat and just be ourselves and talk about what it is to be in this amazing, magical, sometimes hard industry. So sit back, grab a brew and a Becky, and enjoy the podcast. Yeah, there we go. That's recording. Yeah, because you got a podcast.
Yeah, Sakisa. I do. Wrestle Club UK.
What got you into Wrestle Club?
I love wrestling.
Do you?
I've loved wrestling since I was like 11 years old. So I love wrestling.
Like back in the days when it used to be called WWE.
It's WWE now.
No, it's WWF.
It used to be called WWF, yeah.
Yeah, because my brother used to make me play WWF with our trundler bed.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
He would jump, meaning he would wrestle me.
Yeah. But, yeah, I started a podcast about wrestling. It's just me and, four other co-hosts, but we rotate them. And then we just talk about wrestling, the week in wrestling. There's so much wrestling going on. There's so much wrestling going on.
Have you gone and seen the Iron Claw film?
No. You know what's really funny? I got invited to the premiere.
Did you?
Yeah, and I couldn't go. I had to send all the Darvel boys to go.
Was it because you were gigging?
Yeah, I was in, I can't remember where I was gigging. It was definitely somewhere I had to travel. And I was like, oh. And I found out when I was in Butlins, and I was like, no. I'm going to miss the premiere. Because I'm very much a person that, commits. If I've committed to something and then something disastrous happens, then I won't pull out.
Yeah.
And it just has to be, if I'm ill or something like that. That's the only, and even if I'm ill, it's got to be, proper ill.
Yeah.
So, I was really upset to not be able to go to Iron Claw.
Have you watched it?
Not yet. But I have heard mixed stuff. Some people don't like the person who plays Ric Flair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I miss that. Everyone at the premiere. Fine.
Did you used to watch it when Paul Hogan and, no, what was that?
Hulk Hogan.
Oh,
Paul
God.
Hogan. That's Hulk Hogan, good. Yes.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, who has had some controversial stuff happen because he said some racist stuff. So,
yeah.
But yeah, still watch up to now. Go to live events as well, especially in London.
Yeah.
So there's live wrestling shows. I actually hosted an all-female wrestling show yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Called Eve. It's been running for a number of years.
Yeah.
And it basically just features all female wrestlers.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
And it was 200 people there. Today's the 8th and yesterday was the 7th where I was hosting. So we had 200 people in, and then today I think they've got 350 people in to watch wrestling shows. So two back-to-back shows at Eve Wrestling. And it's great fun.
Yeah.
Bunch of wrestlers, female, strong, empowered women.
Yeah.
Just showing off and showing what they can do.
I really liked Glow. I used to watch Glow.
I've never seen Glow.
You've not seen Glow.
I'll tell you what it is about me. I think because I'm a hardcore wrestling fan, watching anything that is meant to be for mainstream people who don't watch wrestling, I think kind of affects me. Or it doesn't really agree with me, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
Do you remember the film that came out, Fighting With My Parents?
Yeah.
Which is based on Paige, or now she's known as Soraya.
Yeah.
I kind of didn't really enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I appreciate they're trying to, I appreciate they told her story. They told in the best way they could.
I just didn't.
I think it's because I'm so hardcore wrestling.
Yeah, do you feel like I was Hollywoodized?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was Hollywoodized, and that's the problem with it.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's probably the similar with Iron Claw. Like, it's probably...
Yeah.
Apparently, like, they changed the times line in order to fit better in with the film.
Oh, really?
So unless you're, like, a hardcore wrestling fan, you wouldn't have known about those changes to make. And I think a lot of, like, factual films do that anyway.
Yeah, they do.
To make it easier for the audience to follow.
Yeah, they sometimes don't include all children and stuff like that. Like, yeah. they'll just put... have one child and yeah.
the important people
yeah
the important yeah, yeah. ones
yeah
because you're the good child
because you know the movie Remember the Titans
yeah yeah
yeah like the white coach in it
yeah
he only had one daughter but he had four
yeah so it's yeah, it's trying to make it easier for audiences to follow. I can appreciate that. And yeah. I feel it's the same with comedy. Like, you have, when you tell stories, you don't include every little detail because it's really difficult for people to follow, especially when they're drunk.
Yeah.
So you just want to like put the main characters in. Yeah. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, but. Yeah. And now that was segue to comedy. Oh,
how slick was that?
That was so slick. Me and Sikison know each other for a long time now.
Long, long day.
Long time. Angel days.
Angel comedy days.
Yeah, the Bill Murray.
Yeah, you were front of house.
Yep.
And it was, you were very enthusiastic about the role. And I was more or less doing tens. I was doing... Tens
and emceeing.
I started emceeing properly there when you were there.
Yeah.
And just getting my foot into the ground of like the comedy circuit and like doing tens and enjoying audiences and just trying to like have fun and not be too much in my head.
Oh my God. Had you not been doing comedy long when we met?
I can't remember what year we met.
We met. It would have been October 2018 because that's when I started.
So the year before was 2017. Oz, because she can do maths.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that year I had just done BBC Awards.
Yes,
I was in
had.
The final.
Yeah.
So by the end of 2017, I had got my first agent. And then was in 2018 was very much me trying to establish myself, if you want to put it, in the mid card.
Yeah.
I keep saying this like it's wrestling. There's mid card in the mid card circuit. Just getting like gigs, trying to get paid.
Yeah.
To establish myself, establishing my name.
Yeah.
And just getting, also getting into MCing. Because yeah. Angel was really the first place that gave me like a proper MC spot.
Yeah.
And allowed me to like be the person I am today and run hellish on audience members.
But, like, they've got such a good way of helping and supporting. Because you had, at those days, you had to do the bucket of both clubs.
Yes, yes.
So they probably had a, like, I don't want to say training, but they had a way to support you and teach you.
Yeah.
I'm saying training. They trained you on how to be a good MC and how to do a bucket speech.
It was, yeah, it was the Angel comedy way, which I think is a great way to establish people figuring out how to do MC and how to deal with audience members, but also how to get money from them at the end in a free show, because also that helps with Edinburgh.
Mm.
When people got to do the free things for Edinburgh and having to do a bucket speech, what do you say? How do you get people engaged with it? What exactly do you want to get people to think about in order for them to give them as much money as they possibly can? Give me your money!
Yeah, because that bucket speech is actually really long.
Yeah.
If you think about it. I remember standing, well, I mean, it probably felt long to me because I was like, we've got another show starting in 3 minutes.
Yeah, because that's the thing with Angel Comedy. There was always another show straight after.
I know. Those were the days we used to write numbers.
And let's, yeah, still do, they still kind of write numbers.
Yeah, on
Camden Hair, but they still will write numbers on people who are on the waiting list at Bill Murray.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. So obviously at Bill Murray now it's ticketed.
Yeah.
And then if there is a waiting list, they write the numbers on the waiting list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be crazy. The amount of different coloured pens we'd have.
Yeah, they've still got the different colour pens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's always interesting, the fact that how people go to Camden Head, if they Google what's comedy in like, or comedy in Angel, or comedy near me, Angel at Camden Head will probably pop up, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas people who know Bill Murray know Bill Murray.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting how Angel Comedy do it, and it's worked for them for so many years.
Yeah.
Where they don't have to fly out, they don't have to promote, they don't have to do marketing. it's just a well-known comedy club.
Yeah.
And Barry was really the first person who encouraged me to be who I am today, just be myself on stage. And his advice when it came to emceeing about no matter what happens, just be honest with what you say. Whatever comes out of your mouth comes out of your mouth. You're not intentionally meant to be funny.
Yeah.
Your job is to be an MC and like guide the show, make sure everything is like kept to time and like you're doing your job and letting the audience members understand that this is a comedy show. They're there to have fun, squeeze banter, some jokes, but also respect the acts.
Yeah.
And I think from feedback I've received since coming into more MCing spots is very much like Sakisa understands that role as an MC.
Yeah.
And she will lay down the groundwork for the rest of the act so they don't have to do extra work as an MC when they start their set. They can just, especially the first act, because I feel like opening spot is always quite hard.
Yeah.
They can just go on and just do their set and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And being able to establish the authority of like, don't fuck up this show. Don't heckle. Don't do shit like that. Otherwise, you're going to get into trouble. We won't tolerate it. I think it's something that I think a lot of MCs, especially coming up in the circuit, forget about. I think it's important to like establish that how we're here to have fun. It's about comedy. We're here for banter jokes. But also, especially if it's a paid show, some people have paid to be in here and want to enjoy the comedy.
Yeah.
Don't come here with your foolery and your fuckery.
Yeah. I think sometimes MCs just want to also do their set. And it's like, sometimes you don't. Your job is actually just to warm these people up.
Yeah.
Open them up.
Exactly. I normally do a combination of MCing, so crowd work quite a lot.
Yeah.
When I'm MCing. And then I'll tell like one or two jokes just to establish that these are jokes. This is how it's done. This is the flow of the show. But if I have a show where I don't have to do jokes and there's still energy in the room, then I know everyone's going to have a good time because we're just in the flow of it. We're enjoying yourself. I like to think of it as like, I don't have to do work if we're just doing banter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so you've talked about Barry, and I always ask this question of all my guests, like, what brought you to comedy? Because you are quite an artistic person, because you're not only a stand-up, you're also a burlesque dancer.
Yes, burlesque cabaret performer.
So was that first or was comedy first?
So I used to be a dancer. I used to be a dancer when I was younger. And then my parents never wanted me to be a proper professional dancer. So I went into education, if you want to put it that way. But dance has always been a part of me. And if anyone's ever heard me on a podcast before, will know that I started working at the Cavendish Arms about 16 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And they had stand-up comedy, so open mic night, Comedy Virgins. But I also did live music, live bands. And my role when I first joined there was to be the front of house for the band nights on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And to work on a Sunday on the bar. So I was... in like full-time education, but I obviously had a pub job, which most people do when they're in education, university. And then we saw several comedians come through in the early stages of their careers, come through the pub, like Cindy V, Dane Baptiste, they all came through Comedy Virgins, Tez Ilias, Harriet Kemsley used to MC the show as well. So names that are now established now came through that pub. And my boss said to me, Shirley said to me, why don't you just give it a go? Because I have this weird personality. Like, I'm quite bubbly, especially when I was working behind a bar, because when people come to a bar, you want them to have a friendly face.
Yeah.
So I would always be that friendly face. And she was like, why don't you just give it a go? There's a stage there. Why don't you just try and do some jokes? And I didn't know and understand the fundamentals of stand-up at that time. I didn't know about joke writing or anything like that. So I just came on stage and riffed about lions for 5 minutes, and that was not fun. It was not funny. I think I sold parts of it because of my personality.
Yeah.
But actual, like, saying, like, where a punchline should be wasn't really a punchline. It was more like, this is what I feel about lions. Why are they being, like, killed if they kill a human being? That's their job. That's in their instinct. They shouldn't be killed. That's a fucking person jumping into a fence, getting eaten by a lion. That's not the lion's fault.
Yeah.
It's not funny, but I used to riff. So yeah, that's how I started to stand up.
And but you kept going anyway, because like a lot of people would probably do that and go, "Oh God, why did I just do that?"
At that time, I had just was training to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And part of my role as a lawyer is I've got an extra qualification, which means I have to go to tribunals and speak to judges and represent my clients in their immigration and asylum appeals. And I'm not very good at public speaking. I've always never been good at public speaking. It's something I'm quite nervous about. And I know, and despite what the job I do now, I've never really been good at talking to people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but like I've never really been good at like saying words and talking to people. And I've kind of understood that why more in the last couple of years because of my recent diagnosis.
Yeah.
You'll realize on this podcast that I can't say words and there's a reason
why. Don't worry, neither can I. I'm dyslexic, so I always say words.
Well, this is the thing. I found out I was dyslexic a year and a half ago. Yeah. So it's led me to think about a lot of things that have happened in my life.
Yeah.
And public speaking is a big one for me.
Yeah.
Having to have a speech and you having to read it out
in
public, people would laugh. I would fuck up words. It was traumatic. So I got into stand-up comedy mainly for that reason, to be like, let's see if we can speak in front of random strangers and get that confidence to just say words.
Yeah.
And still, I still fuck up words, but I'm more confident in fucking up words and make it more playful, whereas now it's not really a trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand that. Like, I have to think about what I'm saying. And then when I want to be articulate, I then get really nervous and my brain starts to go, and then it goes, you're not saying the right things.
Yeah. I recently had to go and do a speech at my old secondary school.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most nervous I have ever been in the last, like, 5-6 years. It was so nerve-wracking to have to do this speech. And I was just like... Because obviously, me being a lawyer, people automatically assume that I'm smart, and I don't feel smart because of how I articulate words and how I normally speak. So having to be like, hey, students, the first thing I literally said was riffed it. I was like, I was where you were like 15 years ago. So I know you lot don't really care about what I'm saying.
And that's when your head goes, what are you doing?
And it literally, my head just went, just stick to the notes. Stick to the notes. Stick to what you wrote. I went into MC mode. I was just like, stick to the notes.
So. Oh my God. As a fellow dyslexic, I totally understand. Because reading aloud, just having to do all that stuff just freaks me. Even just sending emails, like it would take me ages to send one.
I think actually your email I saw about your thing that you've written at the bottom, the footer.
Yeah.
And I've stolen that.
Good.
I've stolen that.
Good.
I think I've made a little bit extra words in it, but I've stolen it just to be like, hey, I'm dyslexic. Some of these words might be fucked up.
Yeah, because you get a lot of backlash. Like, you get a lot of people going, oh, you spelled that wrong. And it's like, that's your issue.
Yeah.
Not mine. Like, you didn't need to pick that up. So I had to put it there so people know if I've made a mistake, they go, oh, she's dyslexic. So I'll let it go.
I think I've noticed more than I did before how much I've misspelled so many words.
Yeah.
Like even certain words that I write down in jokes when I'm joke writing, I'm like, that's not how you spell it, Sakisa. That is not how you spell it.
So then because it's quite an interesting topic to talk about being dyslexic and writing jokes, so then obviously for me, like I'm such a creative writer, but then how do you then formulate, as you said, you didn't know how to write a joke, and then how did you learn to write a joke, and then how did you, obviously you've only learned about being dyslexic in the last couple of years, so how have you used your gift, as I will say, to kind of patent the joke? Am I making sense?
You are making sense. Well, number one, firstly, when are you going to do stand-up properly? Come on now.
No, because you know what? I've said this to people. I feel more like a music producer, that I can understand the musicality of the joke. So I think for me to be able to watch comedy and see where somebody's at, if I knew how to write a joke and do stand-up, I would probably biased to how I would write it.
Okay.
But because I've never done stand-up, I think I'm not, do you know what I mean? So I am watching it from a different point of view.
I feel like I feel like you're just giving me excuses, but that's fine. Excuse me, excuses. For me, it was after I did my first like stand-up at Comedy Virgins, Shirley gave me a job of doing the tech for Comedy Virgins. Mm. So I was in the tech booth doing the sound for Comedy Virgins. And one of the roles was, and the MC I would tech for would be Paul Langton. So I watch him every Wednesday MC.
Yeah.
And one of the perks of the job was that how you used to get, you didn't really get much money, but you used to get 5 minutes every single week.
Mm.
And for the first few months, I didn't really take up that opportunity for the 5 minutes. But I was watching so many comedians come on and watching how they would do things. And then I would try and figure out how, what works for them and what works for me. Because also I've realized my brain has its own way of, has its own language.
Yeah.
And I've obviously, since being diagnosed with dyslexic, I've realized my brain decided it was going to adapt into learning certain things. So how I learn things, and I've realized it is a lot, and I didn't notice until recently, is that through colors, like colors,
yeah.
Like, because I'm a mood, because as being a dancer, I have photographic memory. So yeah. I remember, I've got this really weird, if you want to call it a party perk or party gift, that how I know dance routines from music videos.
Mm.
I can watch a music video and I know dance routines. So all the ones that were very popular when we were like in our teenagers up to early 20s. Yeah. So Beyonce, Single Ladies, Destiny's Child, Britney Spears,
yeah,
Christina Aguilera, Steps, all of those, the song will come on and I will know routines.
Wow.
And it's still in my body now. Like I did it the other day randomly. Like Britney Spears came on and I just went into a weird dance routine. And someone went, oh my God, that's actually from the music video. And it wasn't like I was trying to remember it. It's just in my body.
Yeah.
So because of that photographic memory, I've realized that how I will learn things better via movement. So I was saying this to my participants, that how I, when I do jokes, because I'm such a mover, certain jokes are in my body.
Yeah.
Whereas there'll be pictures of me in a certain position and I know what joke I'm saying.
Mm.
Because it's so in my body. My body wants to do things and that's how I remember things.
Yeah.
So trying to deal with jokes and trying to figure out where the punchline was a long process for me. And this is why probably I didn't do my Edinburgh show well in 2019, where a lot of my friends were doing their debut Edinburgh shows. The same people that I was coming up with, like Hugh Davies and Helen Bauer, Janine, they all did their Edinburgh shows kind of like in 2019. I was like, I don't think I want to do it because I was lacking confidence about comedy at that time. But also, I just didn't feel like the material that I was writing was good enough.
Mm.
And eventually when I did do it, it was obviously during, they had the pandemic and then it was 2022. I was like, well, it's time for us to bloody do this, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you know what? It's kind of like a blessing in disguise because I really felt for those who won all the awards and nominations in 2019 because of COVID. It's kind of like as if they didn't win in a way.
Oh.
Do you know, man? Because they didn't get that whole year of being able to take advantage. I know they've all done really well from it anyway.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like,
well, what happened
in 2019 didn't happen.
Yeah. It was, yeah, I think coming, for me personally, 2022 was obviously a difficult year anyway. For me personally, I'm not going to get into it, but personally, it was a difficult year in 2022. But having to do my debut really was a learning curve.
Mm.
But also there was a lot of pressure on a lot of the debuts. So for example, like me, Josh Jones, who I became very good friends with during Edinburgh because we felt like, because we both did our debuts at the Pleasance, which was absolutely lovely. I loved the Pleasance. But we had a lot of pressure of being, well, I would, and I'm going to say this, and he will probably agree with me, club comedians in an arts festival.
Yeah.
Whereas Edinburgh in general has been known to be storytelling.
Yeah.
There has to be a message in your Edinburgh show.
Yeah.
And my debut show was all about parties and having a good time.
Yes, yeah, because I remember that show, yeah.
And there'll be days when me and Josh would just look at each other and just hug each other like, we got this.
Yeah.
And like advice from like Rachel Fairburn was really great and Jade Adams about if you weren't here in Edinburgh, then it would just be a middle class festival.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
Advice like that was really helpful. But also we had pressure because we had already done TV shows.
Yeah.
We had done Comedy Central stuff. I had done a couple of days stuff. So we had pressure coming into it being like, having to prove that we were actually funny, that we deserve to have these opportunities come to us and why we were the hip thing at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we were kind of lucky to debut when we did because social media hype hadn't hit. The TikTok hype hadn't hit then. So we were lucky enough to be able to do it. And whilst Edinburgh is a roller coaster, I'll have my up days, I'll have my down days. And the end of it, I was very happy that I did it.
Yeah.
I think it was the right decision for me to do.
Yeah. I think also too, the audiences really wanted shows in 2022 as well. Do you know what I mean? Like I think people really wanted to go and support the arts.
Yeah.
Wanted to get out of the house.
But the problem with Edinburgh is that it's so expensive now.
Oh yeah, it's so expensive.
It's not feasible for performers who don't have that kind of money. Like I speak to a lot of people who should be debuting, let's say this year, or should have debuted last year. And they're just like, I can't afford it.
Yeah.
Unless someone's going to pay for them to go up, which is very rare.
Yeah.
No, they're not going up. They're not going to be having the opportunity for them to do an hour. And me doing an hour personally was helpful for me to write material, but to also figure out a narrative and a structure to a show.
Yeah.
So when I came into my second show last year, which is notoriously known to be the most difficult show, because it comes straight after your debut, I had 8 months to write the show and it forced me to write.
Yeah.
And it allowed me to have more material. So when I did have more TV stuff, like Comedy Central Live, I didn't have to burn anything from that I didn't want to burn.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's a shame about Edinburgh because, and I've heard somebody else say this, I think it was Lynn from Funny Woman actually was saying that the Fringe was about undiscovered artists getting their stuff out there. And now it's just become about the elite.
It is. But also, and I've talked about the TikTok. It seems like me and Josh were talking about this the other day, that how it feels like if you are not got 100,000 followers, you're not going to get, or 50,000 followers, you're not going to get a spot on TV.
Yeah.
And therefore, what is left, and all the TV shows, unfortunately, because of funding, are getting cancelled. They're getting pulled. And there's so many comedians, so many great comedians out there, where is the opportunity for us? If you don't want to do social media, because I didn't want to do social media. That's not my brain doesn't work well with social media. Yeah. I've had to hire someone to do my social media for me.
Yeah.
And it's another comic friend who's doing my social media because I just can't deal with algorithms and videos and the pressure to put stuff out on a constant basis. But that's costing me money that I don't actually have and I shouldn't really be spending on. So if you don't want to be a TikTok social media star, and I'm not saying that I'm not dissing anyone who does that. I rate those people that do those kind of thing because it gets them more followers, it gets them more people. Like, for example, Red Richardson, who's been going for yonky years, who is one of the funniest guys I know, has finally got the recognition he deserved, but it's only because of these videos that have been going out.
Yeah.
And a lot of these videos doesn't... Even though it represents him as a person, if anyone knows Red Richardson, these videos are very much red.
Yeah.
He's not putting on anything.
I mean, he was in my venue in 2016 when I worked for Gilded Balloon. Yeah. And like, his show was so dark.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was on at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, it was like, this timing is not right.
Yeah.
Oh,
but luckily, because of the social media and the platform it's allowed him to do, I even had to message him the other day and be like, you're not trying to date him, say your story. This is ridiculous. It's allowed him to now do a massive tour and sell out shows and stuff like that. So there is a platform for that. But for the people who came into it, wanted to just be a stand-up comedian, who wanted to make people laugh, who wanted to have those opportunities, it feels like there's not much there for us apart from doing another Edinburgh show and then going on tour.
Yeah. Because the circuit's not easy either.
The circuit's not easy at all. There's so many comedians, there's so many great comedians, and I'm based in London, and me having to travel, because I do drive, but I don't like driving at night because I have I have fears about driving at night, especially by myself.
Yeah.
And we've heard horrific stories about people who have unfortunately had accidents due to traveling back at night.
Yeah.
By themselves. I have that genuine fear that will happen to me. I have a final destination fear that's going to happen to me. So I would never feel safe traveling by myself in my car.
Yeah.
In London, I can whip it around like no one's business. But on motorways, I'm literally holding on my car for dear life. And I just feel like I would just fall asleep. Because obviously I'm still working. I work a lot. And having to travel, it's about trains. And trains, we all know about National Rail.
Yeah. Come on up.
We all know about National Rail. Whilst I'm very much about, everyone equal opportunity and get your money, can we stop with the strikes, please? Because you're messing up my business.
Yeah, 100%. You're really messing up comedians getting opportunity.
I had to pull out of the women's festival in Manchester in 2022 last year. Yeah, 2022. I had to pull out.
Yeah, you did.
And I pulled out maybe like 3 days before.
Yeah.
Because I saw that I couldn't get the trains were cancelled. I had bought my train ticket, the trains were cancelled, and I was going to stay with my best friend in Wolverhampton. So I was going to go come up here, and I did this before when I came up to Manchester and went to Wolverhampton and stayed with her. That was the plan. And then I saw the trains, like something was happening. I was like, guys, I think I'm going to have to pull this. And then you lot pulled the whole day.
Yeah, the whole day, got everyone pulled. And it was so heartbreaking because then on Sunday and Monday, the last 2 days, no one came out.
Yeah.
Because everyone thought the festival had cancelled because we had to pull that one day. And it really felt like that day in Angel Comedy when all the shows cancelled because of COVID.
Yeah.
And it really was heartbreaking. And, like, that's the thing. Like, totally understand that they need to strike and they want their, as we said, equal pay.
Yeah.
But as artists, we need people to travel.
So, yeah. I really just want to get rich and be like Kevin Hart and just have a private plane just take me everywhere.
I've been watching Selling Sunset. I don't know if you've watched that.
No.
It's an awful show. But it's one of those shows that when you start it, you're like, they have the same argument every episode, but you still watch it. But one of them has a private jet she just flies around in.
Gosh.
Because she likes to take her dog everywhere. I know. It's
I know we're going to talk about climate change and stuff like that, but sometimes I need to have some sort of privilege. I need to have privilege. Give me some privilege for once in my life. So I'm trying so hard to win the lottery or marry a rich man.
Would you have your own jet or would you have your own train?
Oh.
Or would you have a driver?
No, I think driving is quite boring, actually, to be honest with you. And then you have to stop for peas.
Yeah, that's true.
And even though some gas stations are quite nice, some of them are not that nice.
Yeah.
I think having a train would be quite fun.
Your own train.
Would be quite fun.
Yeah.
Actually. I think that would be quite... Then you could have like an entourage. I can have my own party. I have my own train, thank you.
Yeah, because you can do... There's train lines all over this country.
Yeah. And you can literally... Because there's not many places that you can drop off a plane in this country.
Yeah.
But there's loads of trains. Think I would train it. I would train it. Well done, actually, Amy. Well done.
I know. Great question. They just came into my head.
It's a good question. If I ever won the lottery, I'm buying a train.
Yeah, because the king has his own train.
Does it? Is he?
Yeah.
What?
They have their own train.
I didn't realize it was their own train. I thought it was like the government's train and they just rent it out.
I mean, I don't know. I'm taking this from the crown.
Okay, fine.
So I actually don't know. And I'm a foreigner.
Is it one of those old trains? You know, like the old...
Might have been.
Okay. Your choo-choo trains, yeah. You know when they have those fancy, like, what's it called? Like the scones and
and the tea. I mean, if I had my own train, I would definitely have the scones.
The scones.
The scones.
Scones with jam.
Jam.
Where do you put your jam, below or above the clotted cream?
But I don't have cream.
What?
Because I can't have cream.
Are you lactose?
Yeah, pretty much.
Get off this podcast.
I know. Sorry. Get off my own podcast. I love you, Sakisa.
I love you too.
I know. We had many good times at the Bill Murray.
I know. It was actually when you left, I was actually quite gutted that you left.
Yeah.
Your replacement, Kate, is amazing and lovely. Yeah, Kate, we love Kate Palmer.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. But I was quite sad that you left.
Well, you know, it wasn't. Unfortunately, they had to let us go. They couldn't keep us to save the club, which I totally understand. So it was really hard.
Yeah.
Because I did love the job. Yeah. It was stressful at times.
Yeah. Rose Bell.
Every Friday. They're not allowed to do it every Friday now. It's just a month.
Yeah, it's just a month. Just
but it was intense. It was crazy. It was crazy. It was just crazy.
Yeah, no, I can imagine like running a comedy club is quite hard.
Yeah, because we weren't just doing front of house. We were doing the tech as well. We were also doing all the lineups. Mm. So me and Lou, we joint ran it. And we were doing all of that work. And then so on the Friday and Saturdays you had lineup shows, and then on the Sundays you had tours.
Yeah.
And so you had to deal with whips pretty much, and people coming in and not telling you they had tech, and then you're like, we want to remove the whole stage. And you're like, we need to open in 2 minutes.
Yeah. And then if someone big came in was like, I want to have the Bill Murray for a whole week.
Yeah.
You had to cancel everyone.
Yeah, cancel everyone. I know, we don't do that here at the Frog.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a big boys club, big girls club.
Yeah. Can I just say about the Frog? I do appreciate the Frog. I do love the Frog. It's one of my favourite venues in Manchester. But the top row. I feel like you lot have hidden some people up there. And it's always kind of like the people who are like the worst ones are always up there.
They're probably all in the booths.
Yeah, yeah. The worst ones are up there. Yeah. And I'm like, I can hear you. I just can't see you.
Yeah, I know. But that's the only way we can fit 220 people in.
Have you thought about knocking down next door? Knock down next door. Make it bigger.
Make it bigger. Make a big venue.
Make it bigger.
That would be great.
Make it bigger.
No, it'd be great to have a studio.
Like a secondary one.
Yeah, so that you can have smaller shows.
Okay, you could have done double?
Well, no, like have people do tours.
Yeah.
Who might not have the audience reach to do, because when it's in a tour show, it's 250.
Yeah.
Because we I would have loved
to do my tour here, but I was like, never going to happen. I don't have that.
It will happen one day.
I don't know. I might quit comedy in about a year.
No, don't. It will happen one day.
No, because it's like, the problem with, like, I would say me is that how, even though, like, people are like, oh, you've been at Live at Apollo. No one really cares about TV anymore.
No.
So, like, having to, like, reach a different demographic is about me gigging up and down the country. And it is tiring. And this is why she's still single.
Yeah, same.
She's busy. We're busy.
We're busy women.
Busy women. Busy boss-ass women.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's International Women's Day, even though this is going to come out afterwards.
Yeah.
But
however, I will say, I do like, if you were going to have a studio, I do like an idea of smaller. I'd prefer smaller spaces, like it's when it's intimate.
Yes.
I always say that Bill Murray is one of my favourite venues because it's quite intimate.
Yeah, and they're squished in there.
Yeah. So it's like 80 to 100 people in there. And you just have a nice intimate thing. You can have banter stuff with people, and you don't have to worry about people feeling not involved.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes when you do bigger venues, I feel like some people just feel like they're not involved.
Yeah, I don't even know how comedians do the O2 in London.
Yeah.
Like, how do you do... Like, I remember watching... his name has now gone from my head. It was on Netflix, Trevor Noah.
Oh, yeah?
So I remember watching his special, and you could hear the delay. Do you know what I mean? Because he was in such a big venue, you on Netflix can hear the delay of the audience laughing.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
like a 1 second delay of the front laughing and then the back laughing. And he's already moved on to the next joke.
Because watched Kevin Hart twice at the O2.
Mm.
And it was fun. We did decide to get decent seats just so we could see him because he is a small man.
Yes.
But there wasn't much crowd work because you can't do crowd work.
Because then how far away is the stage from the audience? Is it quite a big gap, I'm assuming, at the O2?
It's not a massive gap, but there is enough of a gap that you can't do crowd work.
Yeah.
Like I've seen, he has got like another special on Netflix where he's doing it in a round.
Mm.
And I think Jack Whitehall had a similar thing where he was in a round and he was able to like see people a bit more intimately because they were around him.
Yeah.
I think venues like that are quite cool.
Yeah, I think big venues don't suit comedy.
I think it depends on what you're doing.
Well, yeah, if you're like Russell Kane, he's...
Yeah.
He takes over the whole stage.
Yeah. I think it's...
He moves quite a lot.
But if you're just like one person standing with a mic, then I think it's difficult to have that relationship with the audience unless you are already established.
Yeah.
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 And obviously we all have a... That's where we all got into... I got into comedy just to be better at public speaking. But obviously, I've never wanted to be famous. It's not something I ever wanted to do. But it would be nice to... at least be acknowledged.
Yeah.
Acknowledged. Acknowledgement.
But I feel you are. Like, lots of people know who you are.
Comedians know who
I am. Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, the industry does know who you are.
Yeah.
They do know who you are.
But the problem... So I feel like there is a different... So what I want is for me to be... respected by my peers, which I think I am, let's say 90% from my peers. And then respected by the industry.
Mm.
So people who, if you want to put it, control comedy.
Yeah.
So reviewers, people who commission things.
Yeah.
People who... appreciate diversity.
Yeah.
I think diversity is such an important thing, and there are certain like things that you see out talking about, oh, we need more diversity, and then when you see what they actually produce, you're like, that's not diverse. That's the same thing, but you've just put one person in it.
Well, because it's face fronting, right? So the people behind the scenes who are writing, who are directing, who are producing, who are making the choices are not people of color.
Yeah. So like
I global majority. Yeah.
I did a TV show called Sorry I Didn't Know, and they had hair and makeup was basically black people, and it was the majority of the people on that show were black.
Yeah.
Or like people of color. But it was so refreshing to have someone who knew how to do my hair.
Yes.
Because sometimes I go on to a TV show, especially because my hair is currently in dreadlocks. It's faux locks, but like people will look at it and go, what do we do with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just nice to have someone who had already had an idea of what they were going to do with my hair.
Yeah.
And it was put into a style that I've never had before. And I kept it in as long as I could, which was like 4 days. and who knew about my skin tone, who knew about stuff like that. And I'm not saying that. I had some really great makeup artists who are not people of color who've done my makeup, and I've even hired one to do my photo shoot. But it was so refreshing to have that on set.
Yeah, well, because then also it probably feels like you don't have to have the conversation.
Yeah.
And there's no awkwardness. I'm not saying I don't know these people, but you know what I mean? Like you probably feel like, oh, yes, I don't have to.
Yeah.
These people are just going to get it.
I just sat there and there was music playing.
Yeah.
It was such a nice environment to be around.
Yeah.
And I feel like some people need to understand that a little more.
Yeah, 100%. We do need more representation behind the scenes.
It needs to be behind the scene, in front of the scenes, and not just for the sake of it, for the sake of understanding that people's voices from different diverse backgrounds is important.
Yeah.
And I talk about, obviously, because I come from an immigration background, talking about immigration, the reason why I talk about it on stage is because people don't understand it.
Yeah.
And if you don't understand something, don't say nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you should listen and understand that that person has experience in that area of field.
Yeah.
Same with my personal background, coming from a working class background as a black woman from a council estate, I have had different experiences. And I do quite a few jokes about the fact that how I work so much in my life, and I still work so much. And I think because someone asked me a question once about how do I feel about no longer being working class, being middle class? And I was like, who is middle class right now? Who is middle class? And they were like, oh, because you're a solicitor. And I was like, that doesn't mean I'm middle class, because I had to pay for that education that I just paid off like 6 years ago. 5 years ago. Yeah, 5 years ago. 5 years ago. I was in debt for years. That's why I worked 3 part-time jobs as long with a full-time job. I've only just obtained property because my parents had been living in it for 40 years and then got 50% off from the council for it. And I work in legal aid. I don't work in a corporate field. I'm not middle class. I know who I know my roots. I know who I am. And I think having people, especially when we talk about the cost of living crisis, having those voices is important.
Yeah.
It's essential, because those are the people that represent the world that we live in.
Yeah, especially in the UK.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's really interesting about class, because this country holds on to it like a badge of honor. Obviously, class is in every single country, but no other, my country doesn't talk about class.
Mm.
Like, no one grew up talking about, oh, I'm working class. Mm. Oh, you must be middle class now. We were just all people. Do you know what I mean? Mm. The people at that time when I was growing up who had money were farmers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm, 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 mm.
I think there is, and I think especially in the UK, there is this weird, and it's, if you talk about comedy, dynamic between the South and the North.
Yes.
Like, I love playing in the North, in Manchester, Leeds. I think everyone up here is so much fun and has so much banter and always up for a good time.
And a cup of tea.
but there is this massive thing about, sometimes I do a gig though, and people in that dressing room who don't know who I am go, oh, she's a Londoner.
Yeah.
And there was this weird, you feel this weird, oh, I don't really want to talk to her. Like, they're not really, some of them are not really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm always quite, try to be friendly, introduce myself, and try to speak to people. But you can tell some people are just like, I don't want to speak to you because you're from the South.
Yeah.
And it's a weird divide, and it's a divide that I feel shouldn't really happen.
Yeah.
Because then we are having a war. And if there is a war going to happen, I'm joining the North.
Yes. Okay.
I'm joining the North.
I know. I love living in the North.
Yeah.
Compared to the South.
It's cheaper.
It's cheaper, but everyone's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they've got pasties. Pasties. Edit. You've got pasties. You better edit that.
Yeah, Jacob. Edit that. Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one with comedy. And even, I know Phil Alice was talking about how, you know, people who are middle class, upper class, have been able to afford to do comedy in London because they don't pay that well. You're having to hustle. You're having to have another job.
Mm.
So people who are doing comedy full time in London.
For the last 2 years, I've literally had people go, are you still working in your job? And I go, yeah. And they go, but why? Where you seem to be everywhere. And I'm like, I can't afford to live. You got to think about, I run a podcast now. I also, which is self-funded, It's not produced by anyone. I pay for everything with that podcast. The boys on the podcast, I don't ask for money for them because it's my idea. So I'm self-funding it because I want it to do well.
Yeah.
I have a vision. I also am gigging. So I have to travel to gig, especially if I'm gigging outside of London. You're talking about me doing my Edinburgh shows, having to pay for venues, having to pay for costume, having to pay for flyers. The tour, having to pay for flyers, having to promote, having to do certain things. Like I've just paid for someone to do a trailer for me.
Yeah.
Like it's a basic trailer, but it's a trailer that I can't do myself because I don't have that skills to do. There is a lot of things that come with, and also you're trying to have a life. Like I've got friends who have got really young children. I've got four godchildren that I don't really see.
Yeah.
And that is really hard for me to have to be like, if you want to see me, you have to book me in 3 months in advance.
Yeah.
That's really hard.
Yeah.
But if the moment that you step away from the circuit or comedy, you're kind of back to where you were at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really hard.
Yeah.
And
especially as women.
Especially as women. Because we already are a minority on lineups.
Yeah.
Which is great for me. Double minority. Black and a woman. Oh. What?
Tick, tick. Oh, we've done it, guys.
Tick, 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 tick.
We've done it.
We're solving life problems.
Yes.
Thank you very much for all the clubs for your money.
Yeah.
Cheers. Cheers. Thanks for all your money.
Yeah.
But sometimes I do a gig. I get booked for a gig and I'm like, I know why you've booked me.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. And that's kind of like, fine, fair play, but I know that my talent is like not just about she's black. Even though I talk about white people all the time, fair play, you give me enough contents for me to do jokes about.
I mean, it's so easy.
Yeah, cheese. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
But you can't have it because you're intolerant.
Yeah. Which is a typical white thing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I'd have never met a black person who's intolerant.
Yeah. I know, we're so sensitive.
Gluten free, was it invented until you like brought it in?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Just
sorry, can the wedding menu please be gluten free? No, you can go suck a dick.
Okay. Oh gosh. But hey.
Yeah.
We deserve it.
Yeah. But it is hard. There are times where I'm like, is this something, should I just go back to do it? Because I work part time now as a solicitor.
Yeah.
Is it something that I should just step back from in terms of comedy? And just because whether it's going to make money.
Yeah.
Because especially when we talk about a cost of living crisis. I need money.
Yeah.
Because my parents still live with me because they were meant to move back to Barbados and they're still fucking here.
And your dad trying to become famous on social media. I remember that. Your dad, man. Like, he stole the show.
Okay, if you don't know what I'm referring to, there was during the pandemic, my dad was in an indoor sauna. He purchased an indoor sauna. Is this what we're referring to?
He was in heaps of your videos. I was like, he's stealing the show.
So I was trying to post videos, and he was just always there. And then every time I did a Zoom gig, he was in the background. A Zoom gig. Well, they're just talking about dick. This is the background. Because he didn't want to leave the living room.
I love your dad. Didn't they all call him the hot dad?
Yeah.
Hot dad.
Yeah.
Hot dad.
There's a couple of comics who still refer to him as your dad. I'm like, don't even. Why? Don't mention him.
Yeah. Hot dad. Hot dad.
And I think there was one occasion because my dad has a habit of like walking around shirtless.
Yeah.
That he was he was wearing no shirt.
Yes.
It was just lying on the floor in front of the TV with no shirt on. And I was just like, this is what I have to deal with the pandemic.
Yeah. It was so good. Oh, I love your dad.
Yeah, my dad tried to steal the show. And it's really funny because he doesn't actually like to be on camera. Every time I try to like take a video of him or like take a picture, he hates it.
Yeah. But he secretly loves it.
I think my dad is one of those people who won't admit that he's proud of me.
Yes. Oh my God, baby boomers.
Yeah. Me and my dad have this like annoyed, like, I shouldn't say this on the podcast, but I'm going to.
Yeah.
So when I leave, I will go buy stupid and he will go buy idiot. That is our relationship.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
And I'll come home and be like, hey, stupid. He'd be like, hey, hello, idiot.
Does he wait up for you?
I think he does, but he doesn't like to admit that he does.
Yeah.
Him and my mum do.
Yeah.
The other day I came home really, because obviously I'm of a certain age. I'm not telling you how old I am.
No.
But I'm of a certain age and they should, you don't yeah. need to be waiting up for me.
Yeah.
I'm a grown ass woman. My mum's really like, because obviously being a woman walking the street, yeah. sometimes my mum gets really worried and she's very much like, are you taking your car?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I'm planning to get drunk. Okay. Yeah. I'm taking an Uber home. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. But I came home the other day. I can't remember where it was. No, I do remember where it was. I was traveling back from Leeds from a gig, which was a lovely gig. And the only train back, the last train back was 8:15 to London, which was the time I was on stage.
Yes.
So the only way I could get back to London at night, if I didn't want to pay for a hotel, which again, cost of living crisis, I would only do it if I have to. And this is the only second time I've ever done this in my comedy career, is I got a mega bus at 11:30 at night, which got me into Victoria, London at 4:30. And then luckily it was a Saturday. So was it Saturday or Friday? It was Saturday. And luckily, because in London, we've got 24-hour tubes on the Friday and Saturday now.
Yeah.
So the Victoria line drops me home.
Good.
More or less. So I did that. And then I walked in, not expecting it, like them to be up. Because I told them what time I was coming back.
Yeah.
I was like, don't expect me to be up. Stay up. Just make sure the door's unlocked. Because we have one of those like keychain like locks. Come home and she's in the living room with a cup of tea at 5 o'clock in the morning. She was like, she couldn't sleep.
Oh my gosh.
She was like, I was feeling a bit unwell. So I woke up and I had a cup of tea. And I was like, you're lying.
Yeah.
I was like, you're lying. Like, you're lying. Which is, I don't know. There's some days that I find it a bit like, I'm not 12 anymore.
Yeah.
And some days I'm like, oh, bless you.
Yeah.
And she's very much like, if I don't message her, if I'm away from a long period of time, because I quite enjoy having the space away from my parents, because as you would imagine, it's nice. It's nice.
Yeah.
But there will be, like, for example, when I went to Edinburgh, and I think I called her maybe like after 8 days or maybe 4 days, or messaged her like after 5 days or something. She was like, I miss you.
Aww.
She was like, you didn't call me before. Why did you not call me? You didn't let me know you arrived. I'm like... And I always go to her, what are you going to do when you move out or I move out? Like, what, you're going to call me every single time to let me know where I'm going?
Yes.
So
she's going to get one of those, she's going to get those, you know, the find me friends.
Oh, God. She doesn't even know how to use technology, so it's okay.
Anyway, my dear, it's been amazing chat with you.
This has been lovely.
But I can hear the clubs.
So the club started.
Do you know what? He's done the 10-minute call for the show to start and you've got to be on stage in an hour.
Yeah.
And you need to kind of like chill and be in the green room.
Yeah, I'm about to have an alcoholic drink.
Yeah.
I'm in Manny. Well, let's party. I'm in Manny.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries.